You know, Kathy was a very spiritual woman, loved God, took her spirituality very seriously. She was a lot of fun. I just really enjoyed her company. I felt safe with her. And, you know, it's funny, Kathy, of course, and she, obviously, she traveled with me and did a lot. Normally, if she was alive, she'd be with me tonight here. And she'd speak, too. I'll tell you, so I was never attracted to Kathy. But I'll tell you, Kathy and I refused to allow that to be a defining part of our marriage. Like, we're not going to let that be a problem in our marriage. The truth is Kathy and I had an amazing relationship. But what we focused on for our success was spiritual intimacy, relational intimacy, emotional intimacy, and just really enjoying life and having fun together. When we put those recipes, those ingredients together, what it did was, then it allowed us to also have a great physical relationship as well. But what we really focused on was emotional, relational, and spiritual. And I think one of the greatest challenges in marriages today is that everyone focuses so much on the physical, and they neglect the other three most important ingredients, spiritual, emotional, and relational. And so that's why you have people after year 10 going, well, I don't want to be in this marriage anymore because, you know, he's not changing, and, you know, I'm not attracted to him anymore. And who's kidding who after a period of 10 years of marriage? I mean, gravity hits us all, and none of us look the same way as we did before. And so if you're into this relationship and it's really all about physical attraction, you're going to be up for a huge disappointment. And if you haven't been working on the physical, on the emotional, relational, and spiritual, then you're really going to have a problem later on in your marriage. So the fact that I was deficient in physical attraction to Kathy was never an issue. I mean, we also obviously had to deal with it with a lot of sensitivity and kindness and communication, but it just wasn't a big deal. And I'll say this too. Sorry, I'm not your part of your question, but I told Kathy all the time I thought she was beautiful. I wasn't attracted to her, but I did think she was beautiful. Just because I'm not attracted to girls doesn't mean I can't appreciate beauty. Right. So I liken it like this. Like, when I see a sunset, I can look at the sunset and go, wow, God, look what you made. This is incredible. Look at that sunset. And I want to stare at the sunset, and I'm amazed at the sunset, and the sunset's beautiful. I'm not sexually attracted to the sunset, but I love the sunset. And so with my wife, Kathy, I wasn't sexually attracted to her, but I could appreciate that God created this woman for me and that she was physically beautiful. So I told Kathy all the time I thought she was beautiful. And I'll tell you what, I treated that woman like $1 million, man. I did. Nobody has to tell me how blessed I am to have a marriage, to be married. I was saying in the car on the way here tonight, I have not done very well in a lot of things at life. I'm not that accomplished in much. But I'll tell you the one thing I did good in my life, two things. I was a great husband. And I was a really good dad. The rest of the stuff, you know, you can judge me for whatever. But yeah, so Kathy, I made that woman feel like $1 million every day. Now, there were some days she only felt like a couple hundred thousand, but even that's not that bad, right? So yeah, anybody else? Yes, sir. Oh, yes. Right. Yes, that's right.
That you guys share, it's like it calls you to be open. I'm just so grateful that God allowed you and her, that she was supporting you with your men's ministry.
Yep.
I think it's very powerful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your openness.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah. Yes, thank you. Appreciate that. Yes.
Considering you face a kind of persecution, so what keeps you going?
Question is, you face a ton of persecution, what keeps you going? You know, I don't think I've really faced much persecution. I have faced a lot of people mad at me, but nobody's really, I mean, no one's hit me. I haven't been, like, you know, beaten and dragged outside the city like the Apostle Paul, you know. I've gotten some really nasty emails, and protesters have shown up and yelled at me. I've been, you know, lied about in local press in some of the cities that I've gone to. So I don't view it as persecution. I more view it like maybe some obstruction or something. But anyway, I think the truth is I'm not a very brave person. I don't think of myself like that. I don't like going to those events. I don't like being picketed and protested. In fact, I say to churches now, and they say, "Do you want to come and speak? We want to hold something on a university campus." I'm like, I mean, I'll really do that if you want me to, but could we not? Because, you know, the gay rights people will show up and they'll all yell and scream, and all the Christians will be afraid, and the police might come, and I don't know. Do you really want that? Like, I'm really hoping, you know, we'll just keep it in-house, you know. And I think the other thing, honestly, is with that kind of stuff, I just think I'm fine. I don't care what people think. I used to be really worried about what you guys would think. Like, I got to be honest, it's still not easy standing up in front of an audience of people saying, "Hi, my name's Guy and I like men." Like, that's weird, right? Every time I do this, before I get up, Ron's saying a prayer, I'm sitting here, I'm about to get up, and the thing that's going through my mind is, I can't believe I'm about to stand up and tell these people that I had sex hundreds of times with men and I like guys. Like, I can't believe I'm about to do this. All right, hey, great to see everybody. So glad I'm here in Charlotte. This is awesome. Nice place, right? But it's weird. It's intimidating. And you know, I don't know what you're really thinking. And I'm like, but then the other side of me is like, I can't do anything about that. The message is important. We need to talk about this stuff. Somebody needs to say it. So I'm not going to worry about what you guys think. So that's kind of how I deal with it, yeah. So anybody else? Yes, sir, in the back. Yeah. Yes.
Communicate. So how did you get, what happened in your life to get you past that
point? Yep.
So about who invited you? What was the story? How can we do that?
Yeah, thank you. The question is, you know, how can we talk to people that we care about? He mentioned that there's some people in his family he wanted to reach out to, wasn't sure how. First thing I'd say, if you can, is come to tomorrow's workshop, because the whole class is going to be on that. But I would say that here's a strategy I would suggest you use. This will work with somebody at work, somebody you know, somebody at school, somebody at work, or maybe a family member. And you've always been like, I've always wanted to talk to my uncle about this, but I don't know what to say, and it's going to be awkward, and I don't want him to be mad at me, and so I don't know what to do. And if you have a family member like that, and it's always bothered you, here's a strategy that I think will work, will help, and it's very quick, and it takes the pressure off. This is one of several strategies, but here's one of them. Let's say it's Uncle Bob. Uncle Bob's gay. Everybody in the family knows it, but nobody ever really talks about it. Uncle Bob's got a partner. And you're a Christian, you're thinking, I want to reach out to Uncle Bob, but oh my goodness, what on earth am I going to say there? So you've been avoiding it. Here's what you do. Next time you see Uncle Bob, maybe it's a family reunion, right? And you're all hanging out in the summer and you're having a barbecue. Hey, Uncle Bob, how you doing, man? Oh, so good to see you. Yeah. Hey, Uncle Bob, do you mind if we just pull aside here for a second? I just want to ask you, say something to you and talk about something. Yeah, sure, come on over here, Uncle Bob. Hey, Uncle Bob, listen, I just, you know, privately, I just want you to know how much you mean to me. Like, you've been such a great uncle, and I so value our friendship and relationship, and I just really want to thank you for that. I do want to mention something, but I don't want it to be awkward. I don't want to hurt your feelings, and so I really hope you'll trust the heart that this is coming from. But I would really someday, when you're ready, love to have a talk about homosexuality, your relationship with your partner. It's something we don't talk about, and I would love that chance, and I'd like to share what I believe in regards to my faith about this, but I only want to do that when you're ready. And so, Uncle Bob, I'm never going to bring it up again. I just want you to know, whenever you're ready, if that day ever comes, whether it's a year from now, 5 years from now, 20 years from now, if you remember this conversation, you'll go, you know what? Okay, what did you want to say? And I'd love to have that serious conversation where you just sit down and really talk. But until then, Uncle Bob, I'll never bring it up again. Is that okay? Uncle Bob, you're awesome. I love you. Let's go back and have a steak. Done. Whole thing took 60 seconds. What happened there? Uncle Bob will never forget that conversation, number one. Number two, you won't have to spend the rest of your life beating yourself up because you've never said anything to Uncle Bob. Number three, it has now taken the responsibility off of you and given the responsibility to Uncle Bob. You no longer have to think, well, how am I going to say it? What am I going to say? And always act weird in front of Uncle Bob because you don't know what to say. You've done it. And number four, it now gives the Holy Spirit the ability to work and maneuver his way through Uncle Bob's life. It's not your job. It's not your problem. This is Uncle Bob's problem. And so when you say to Uncle Bob, I'll never bring it up again, really, don't ever bring it up again. It's not like the next family reunion. It's like, hey, Uncle Bob, remember last year when I told you about, you know, how you feeling now, huh? You want to talk yet? No, never bring it up again. That's okay, because I'm not saying give up and quit it, Uncle Bob. I'm saying behind the scenes, in your heart and in your mind, you pray like crazy, right? You pray that the Holy Spirit is working in Uncle Bob's heart and life and circumstances to bring him to a point where he'll think to himself, oh yeah, my nephew. He said he wanted to have that talk with me. You know what? Okay, I'm going to call him up. Pray for that. And then be ready. Educate yourself on the issue of homosexuality. Learn what pro-gay theology is. Figure out, you know, what you want to say in advance. Go to my website, strengthandweakness.org. Read some articles. Talk to some of my staff. Get ready so that when Uncle Bob says, I want to talk, what did you want to say? You're not like, oh, well, I didn't think you wanted to talk now, you know? You can be like, Uncle Bob, absolutely, let's go, right? But you pray like crazy so that you can really help Uncle Bob. But it takes the burden off of you and puts the burden on him and allows time for the Holy Spirit to work. And now you just get to love Uncle Bob. That's how I would deal with it. 1 minute conversation. Yes, sir.
As a dad, I was wondering how you talk to your children, you raise them. You said you see yourself as a successful father. So about that, like how you addressed issues. I mean, it may have just been homosexuality, but how did you discuss that with your children? Christians.
So the question is how did I raise my kids and talk about difficult situations and circumstances, talk about sex and drugs and blah, blah, blah. I think, so again, I haven't done this perfectly, and there's some amazing parents here tonight that I'm sure have got me beat, and I'd love to learn from you. That said, you know, Kathy and I were just big believers in transparency, and so always in an age-appropriate way, we were very open with our kids. I didn't tell my kids that I was about my gay life until they were like 12, 13. They were 12 and 13 when I told them. But before that, I mean, we'd talk about Kathy, before she became a Christian, lived a very sinful life and was involved in drugs and alcohol and just, you know, really messy life. So we just wanted our kids to know about that. We didn't want our kids to, you know, think that their parents were perfect. In fact, what we wanted was our kids to see how messed up our lives had been so that they could look at our lives and go, wow, look at what God can do. And I also wanted my kids always to feel safe to come and say to me anything. And I even said to we said to our kids, if you're in trouble, I mean real trouble, not like, Dad, I failed an exam or, you know, I dented the car, not that kind of trouble, but I mean, if you're in real trouble, something big is going on, I promise you, if you come to me and tell me, I promise you, I will stay calm, I will not freak out, we will talk it out, and we will get through it together, and I will never stop loving you. I promise you. Because I wanted my kids to know that if you're in real trouble, Mom and Dad are a safe place to go. And I tell parents today, like, if you want to talk to kids about homosexuality, that kind of thing, you just do it in an age-appropriate way, but I think we need to talk about it. Like, if you're sitting there with your family and you're watching Modern Family and you got this gay couple on there and you're watching it with your kids, then say to your kids, now your kids are what, 6, 7, 8 years old or whatever, and you say, you know, guys, it's a funny show, we love watching it, but you know how those two men are kissing and whatnot on Modern Family? You know, it's funny and we watch it, but honestly, guys, that's not what God intended. And you're going to meet a lot of people like that in your life. And we need to be kind to them and respectful to them. And we're going to welcome those people into our home and be kind to them. But that's not what God intended. And we need to pray that they'll become Christians. And so you just deal with it in an age-appropriate way. You're driving down the street and you see a billboard of, I don't know, some girl in her skimpy underwear or some dude in his underwear or people kissing or whatever. And little Johnny in the back seat is 5 years old and he's going like this. Well, just don't turn up the radio louder. Like, say something to little Johnny, you know? Like, you know, son, that is not what how God wants people to display their bodies. And we need to pray for that lady. And like, talk to your kids about these things, right? Have spiritual conversations in an age-appropriate fashion. But in generally, the idea was, Kathy and I wanted to let our kids know how broken we were so that they would know that there's hope. Yeah. And Ron, you can shut this down whenever you want. I'm just going, you're the man with the clock, right? Okay.
We've got about 10 more minutes.
10 more minutes. Okay, great. Anybody else? Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, queer, it's back. You know, that's back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't even, but I think it means something different.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
So, non-binary. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, all this. I just really just don't know anything. I'd really like to know, actually, more than that, just what is sin? At what point is this actually sin? Cultural, I'm going to use the uni bathroom or whatever.
Yep.
Our daughter is going to be, you're going to be up there next week, right?
I'm going to Nashville, yeah.
So she'll be there.
But yep.
I just want to be able to talk to her.
Yep.
Where she's at.
Yep.
Because, you know, she thinks, and because of things that I have said.
Sure. Yeah. Yep.
You know, once you see certain things, you do certain things, you can't unrate it.
Mm-hmm.
Going there.
Yes. Yeah, so we're talking about terminology and different terms that are used and keeping up with that and when is it sin and when is it isn't. And so it's great. Don't feel bad that you can't keep up. I can't keep up. It's amazing to me. The new term in Canada now is LB. I'm tired. Anyway, you got all the letters, and then it gets to the end, and then it's 2, and then H, and now 8. That's for Indigenous people in Canada who are homosexually attracted. Like, if things just keep getting at it, like, I can't keep up. So don't feel about that, bad about that. I would just say in general, here's how I deal with this. If you're not dealing with Christians and you're just in your community, then I always call people what they want to be called. And I don't, just out of societal respect, if this girl is really a guy, and I know his name is Gary, but he wants to be called Susan, out of societal respect, and as this person is a human being, I will call him Susan if that's what he wants. I don't have a problem with that. If somebody, you know, uses a term to be able to describe their sexual identity, you know, I don't want to go like, wow, what is that? I want to be like, oh, okay, like, it's a human being. They need to be treated with dignity and respect. And whether I think it's real or not real, or whether I think it's ridiculous or not ridiculous, to them it's important. And so I just accept it. So outside of the church, my general idea is that we just want to accept people. And for societal respect, call them whatever it is they want to be called. Accept whatever it is that they are living by. Because the ultimate goal is we want these people to become Christians, keep dialogue open, keep conversation going, and try to get them to come to church. And we want them to think that the Charlotte Church or the Asheville Church is going to be a safe place for people who are different than us to come and learn and worship. And if they think we're all going to be weirded out because, you know, they want to be called Sue, even though we know it's a guy called Gary, then they'll never get in the door. And you know, there's a lot of other people like Guy Hammond walking around out there. Remember, it took me 2 years of going to church. While I'm having sex with all these men, I'm still going to church on Sundays and hearing the message. So 2 years of building those relationships to finally get me to the point where I felt safe enough to say, here's who I really am. And prayerfully, you guys can be so kind, so hospitable, so respectful to people with whom you disagree that they'll be like, I want to come to your church. And maybe it'll take some people a couple of years of coming here every week and listening to Rodney preach before they go, okay, I want to tell people who I really am. And yeah, real long answer to your question, I'm sorry, but that's in general it, yeah. Anybody else? Yes, ma'am. Yeah. So I think what's most important is for us to recognize, so it's about people if they feel like they were born that way, and so God is unfair. I think the important thing to recognize, again, I'm stepping into tomorrow's territory, but the bottom line is we don't know if people were born that way. The science has yet to prove definitively that homosexuality is a genetically based trait. Like, we don't know that. There's not a single study definitively proving that homosexuality is caused by genetics. And I'm open to the fact that it was, people are born that way. Like, I'm very open to that idea. Like, one day they may discover a gay gene. They haven't discovered it yet. So if you hear people say, no, there is a study, I read it. No, yeah, then find out where that study came from. Because serious science? No. Even the American Psychological Association, a very pro-gay leaning group, still has to admit, yeah, no science to prove that people are born this way. So, are people born this way? I don't know. But it does feel unfair. When people say that, I'm like, yeah, I get it, man. I feel it's unfair to me, too. I understand. I don't know if it's worthy of getting into an argument with people to try to tell them that they weren't born that way. You know, I think maybe after you've known them for a while and maybe had some relationship, you can say, you know, we don't really know that you were born that way. How much of it is nature? How much of it is nurture? We don't really know. I like this line of thought, though. Nature loads the gun, nurture pulls the trigger. And I think that's probably some close, like, I was sexually molested when I was 8, right? So nature loads the gun, but nurture, there I go. Thanks for that, man, because you just ruined my life. So I understand when people feel like it's unfair. I would, I guess, try to find a language that says something like, I am so sorry. I bet, man, that has got to be so frustrating and confusing. The only thing I could tell you is that in my own personal life, there have been things that I've been really struggling with. I've got my own challenges where I feel like, God, this is so unfair to me. Maybe you have a spouse who has died, a child who has died. Maybe you've got a challenge with an addiction. Maybe it's gambling or alcohol. But there, even all of us have got something in our lives, and you can say, listen, in my own life, I got to be honest, this happened in my life, and it felt really unfair, and I've really struggled with that. And so I'll tell you, I understand why you'd be upset and you feel like God has cheated you. But I also tell you this, I really do believe that God loves you incredibly, and I want you to be able to come and hear this message. Like, I want to sit down with you with an open Bible and have a conversation, because while you feel like you've been mistreated by God and maybe things are unfair, I want to show you some things that I think can really help you understand God in a much deeper way, help you understand how he works and how he feels about you, because I don't think that it's God mad at you, angry at you, or is trying to dupe you. I think, you know, life has hit you hard here, and I don't think it's necessarily all God's fault, but I'd love to have that conversation. So you got to find a way to be able to accept, wow, that's got to be hard. I get that. Wow, I got these things in my life too. You're right. It doesn't feel fair, does it? But, you know, I also want you to know about God.
Are you going to get into that tomorrow? Or what does it say if scriptures use?
Mm-hmm. All right.
God.
Yes.
Maybe you could take this last minute to share about the books that you brought with you and some of the content of each one.
Yeah, thank you. So is, I'm sorry, what's the sister's name who's going to help me with books?
Lisa.
Is she here tonight?
She is.
Lisa, are you here? That's okay. That's right. I told Lisa we weren't going to be selling books tonight anyway. I'll sell you a book if you really want one, but you can get them tomorrow. We're going to sell the books tomorrow. I got 4 books here with me tonight. First one is called, first book I wrote, Caring Beyond the Margins, What Every Christian Needs to Know About Homosexuality. It covers all this stuff. And it would be a really good book for you to have in your library just to educate yourself on. The second book I wrote is a book called Tempt Away. How to Defeat Every Temptation in Under 60 Seconds. And How to Recover Quickly When You Don't. I wrote that book because I was teaching at a conference in Boston a few years ago, and I had been explaining that I had come up with a little strategy that I had been using to defeat temptation. I felt like I wasn't doing really well, and I just thought, I got to do better than this. So I said, I came up with this strategy, and it's been working great. And since employing this strategy in my life, I've been overcoming a ton of temptation and just having all this victory. So I was telling that to the Boston church, and then one of the Boston elders came up to me and said, you really know how to overcome? And I said, I could defeat any temptation under 60 seconds. That's what I was discovering. He said, you know how to defeat every temptation under 60 seconds? I was like, yeah. He's like, you have to write a book about that. I was like, really? He goes, yeah, everybody wants to defeat every temptation under 60 seconds. I was like, okay. So I wrote the book, and I do. I guarantee it. You do what that book says? I guarantee it. You will be able to overcome any temptation under 60 seconds. Guaranteed. It's not money back guarantee, but I do guarantee it. The third book I have out there is a book called Messed Up, Proof That You're More to God Than Your Mistakes. And if you've ever done something where you're like, I'll never get over that. Maybe you're involved in something right now and you're thinking, I don't think I can. Nobody even knows, but man, I'm in trouble here. How am I going to recover from this? Or maybe there's something somebody did to you, and you're like, I just can't get over this. And it's really hurting me. Then that's a really good book for you. Proof that you're more to God than your mistakes. Trust me, from a guy who's done a really good job messing up lots of his life over the years. I'm still standing and I'm still here. So that's a really good book. Fourth and final book is a book called Return to Sender, and it's a series of stories from the Bible of people that just made a complete mess of their lives, and talks about how just God worked and maneuvered through their lives for them to come on to become some of the greatest Bible heroes ever. And that's my latest book, just came out. It's actually one of my favorites. So anyway, those are the books that are there. If you want one, I can help you tonight, but we're going to be selling them tomorrow. All right? Great. Thanks, Ron.